Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, August 21st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a union vote by home health care workers will go forward. A copper mining company is promising hundreds of jobs on the Iron Range. And Mark Dayton's second-term agenda. A federal judge says he will not issue an injunction to stop a union vote by state-subsidized personal care assistants. Tim Pugmire reports.
U.S. District Judge Michael Davis denied the motion from union opponents for a preliminary injunction. Nine home-based PCAs are suing state officials and the Service Employees International Union, claiming that the election now underway among 27,000 in-home health care workers is unconstitutional. They argue it violates their right of free political expression and association. But Davis said the election must proceed. The court will not interfere with an ongoing election based on plaintiffs' fear about what the outcome of that election might be, Davis wrote. Davis also said the plaintiffs could renew their challenge if the union is approved. The State Bureau of Mediation Services is scheduled to count the union election ballots on August 26th. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
A company proposing a huge underground copper mine near Ely has released a feasibility study predicting a profitable mine life of at least 30 years and the creation of 850 jobs. Dan Crocker reports.
The $2.7 billion Twin Metals project would target a rich vein of copper, nickel, and precious metals near the southern edge of the Boundary Waters. Christopher Dundas, chairman of parent company Duluth Metals, touted the project's potential in a call with investors.
We think that this project compares very well to other copper development projects in the world.
The company has yet to secure financing for the mine. Aaron Clems with Friends of the Boundary Waters Wilderness says the study doesn't alleviate his group's environmental concerns.
Because surface waters from the project would flow into the Boundary Waters Wilderness and put that wilderness at risk.
Twin Metals joins PolyMet and several other companies exploring possible copper mines in northeast Minnesota. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
Minnesota students continue to lead the nation in ACT scores, but a gap remains between white students and students of color. Tim Post has the story.
This was not the first year that Minnesota students did well overall on the college readiness exam. For the past 9 years, they've posted the highest average overall score among states where a majority of students take the exam. This time, it's 22.9, a tiny slip from the previous year's score of 23, but still nearly two full points higher than the nationwide average. 36 is the highest score you can get on the test. Minnesota Education Commissioner Brenda Caselius is happy with the results, but says more work remains to be done to improve the results of all students.
Certainly we're proud that we're number one in the nation, and that's important, but we'll be much more proud when every single one of our students earn a high school diploma and are ready for college or to go right into their career.
The latest report on ACT scores shows a continuing gap between white students and students of color. In Minnesota, white students scored an average of 23.7. The average for black students was 17.9, the lowest average among non-white test takers. There's also a gap in overall college readiness between white students and students of color. 44% of white students met college readiness benchmarks in English, math, reading, and science, but only 10% of black students hit those benchmarks. Caselius says a new effort starting this year aims to improve college readiness for all students. Students will take tests in 8th grade and 10th grade to see if they're on track to take the ACT. Then all Minnesota high school juniors will take the full ACT for free in the spring. Last year, 76% took the test. The exam will replace a series of tests students were required to pass in order to graduate in recent years. Caselius calls the switch a game changer.
Because it sets the expectation that every student has to have some level of post-secondary in order to earn a living wage in the future and to be ready for a really good career.
Larry Pogemiller, commissioner of the State Office of Higher Education, says the new testing protocol is intended to get more students thinking about what they'll do after high school.
You know, that doesn't necessarily mean a four-year college. Could be a two-year or even a certificate program. But that it's likely that something beyond your high school diploma is going to be necessary.
Pogemiller says helping students, especially students of color, better prepare for college isn't something that should start in the final years of high school. He says a push by the state now to get more kids into quality preschool education and have them reading at grade level by third grade will pay off years later when they take those college readiness tests. Tim Post, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Governor Mark Dayton is scheduled to be at the Minnesota State Fair today. A lot of people see the fair as the unofficial start of the campaign season. Dayton has said he'll wait until Labor Day to really start campaigning, but he did talk to Tom Scheck about his agenda.
When Mark Dayton ran for governor in 2010, he said he wanted to improve the state's economy, spend more on schools, make the tax system fairer, and end the cycle of recurring state budget deficits. 2 years ago, Dayton followed through by raising income taxes on Minnesota's top earners. He used the money from the tax increase to balance the state's budget, fund statewide all-day kindergarten, and increase spending for schools. During this year's session, Dayton pushed for a $1 billion public works construction bill. And lately, he's been taking a victory lap to promote some of the projects it pays for.
This is a great day for Mankato and for Minnesota State University Mavericks. There you are.
Last week, Dayton was in Mankato for the groundbreaking for an expansion of the Mankato Civic Center. Dayton said the public works projects, the new Viking Stadium, and other business subsidies helped lower the state's unemployment rate.
This is a crucially important project for downtown Mankato, and as the regional capital of this part of Minnesota, it means it's important for the region, it means it's important for the entire state.
4 years ago, Dayton campaigned by barnstorming the state, visiting 87 counties in 87 days. This year, he said his day job has curtailed his campaign time. Instead, he's using public events like the Mankato visit and the Bully Pulpit to highlight his agenda.
My campaign theme was a better Minnesota. And we have a much better Minnesota today than we did when I took office.
Dayton is hoping voters agree with him. The 67-year-old is running for re-election for the first time in a career that includes one-time stints as state auditor and U.S. senator. And if he's re-elected, he says it will be his last term in office. Dayton says a top priority for a second term is improving the state's current and future labor force. He said he's committed to spending more money on education and that he wants the state's colleges and universities to better prepare students for work. Dayton said the focus on the labor force is necessary to ensure highly skilled older workers can be replaced when they retire.
We have to find a way for the sake of everybody in Minnesota, as well as for those individuals, to get that lined up.
Dayton's Republican opponent, Jeff Johnson, says the governor's tax policies have put Minnesota on the wrong path. On the night he claimed the Republican nomination, Johnson told supporters he'd put a check on government spending and tax increases.
I have a vision of a state where politicians understand that taxpayers work really, really hard for our money, and we treat it just as carefully as though it's coming out of our own pockets, which ain't happening in St. Paul right now.
Dayton said the tax hikes Johnson is criticizing helped pay for important things like job training and economic development. He said Johnson should spell out where he would cut spending if he rolled back the tax hikes. Dayton also said Minnesota's economy is doing better than many other states. And as for future tax hikes, Dayton says he's reluctant to push for them.
I don't have anything right now that I would do. I think we need a period of stability in our tax system.
Republicans have also criticized Dayton for approving $89 million for a new office building for the Minnesota Senate and for the botched rollout of MinSure, the state's online health insurance exchange. Dayton said the building is a part of an overall capital renovation to accommodate legislators and the public. He said MinSure's rollout was problematic, but it's doing better. Dayton said he intends to run a positive campaign, but he also said he's going to point out where he differs with his opponent. He said Johnson would push for a budget that cuts government spending, stops a minimum wage increase, and rolls back tax hikes on top earners.
The kind of things we suffered through for a decade before I arrived are going to come right back at us, and I think people will see that that's not in their best interest.
Both Dayton and Johnson will have plenty of time to highlight their differences over the next 75 days. Dayton has committed to debating Johnson 6 times before Election Day. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.